And now Monitor brings you Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence Spivak with four of America's top news reporters ready for this unrehearsed news conference. Here's the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
Welcome once again to Meet the Press. The Senate investigation of racketeering in labor and management is now approaching its climax. After 2.5 years of intensive effort, the inquiry has resolved itself into a drive for labor reform legislation. It promises to be the leading issue before Congress in the days ahead. One of the principal figures in laying the groundwork for labor reform is the chief counsel of Senator McClellan's committee, Mr. Robert Kennedy, who is our guest today. Mr. Kennedy's interrogation of President James Hoffa of the Teamsters Union has been one of the dramatic highlights of the investigation, a clash of strong personalities. Mr. Kennedy supervises the work of about 100 committee agents who have gathered evidence in many leading cities. He began his Washington career as an attorney in the criminal division of the Department of Justice. In the field of politics, he managed the 1952 campaign in which his brother John Kennedy was first elected as a senator from Massachusetts. And now seated around the press table, ready to interview Mr. Kennedy, are Clark Mollenhoff of the Des Moines Register and Tribune, May Craig of the Portland, Maine Press Herald, Edward Follier of the Washington Times Press, Washington Post and Times Herald, and Lawrence E. Spivak, our regular member of the Meet the Press panel. Now, Mr. Kennedy, if you're ready, we'll start the questions with Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Kennedy, the other night on the Jack Parr Show, you made some serious charges against Mr. Hoffa outside of your investigation, and he threatened to sue you for libel. Will you tell us what your reaction is to that threat? Do you think you can prove the charges you made against him?
Oh, I feel that in our investigation that we have shown that Mr. Hoffa has made collusive deals with employers, that he's betrayed the union membership, that he sold out the union membership, that he's put the gangsters and racketeers in important positions of power within the Teamsters Union, that he's misused union funds. I say that, and I will say it again. If Mr. Hoffa wishes to sue me, I think we can take that to a court and allow it to be decided by a jury, and I'm sure that Mr. Hoffa should feel that if he loses that case, and I think it should be done immediately, if he wishes to sue me, that if he loses that case, that he should resign as international president of the Teamsters, because if he is guilty of any one of these things, he is not worthy to be the international president of that union.
Mr. Kennedy, you charged Mr. Hoffa at the last hearing with a betrayal of his union membership, betrayal of his own membership. You got any evidence to prove that? I thought most of the Teamsters were fairly well sold on the wages he's gotten for him, the fringe benefits he's gotten for him, and everything else.
Well, Mr. Spivak, I would say this, that the Teamsters' contracts as a general proposition are high, with some major exceptions, but they are generally high. But the highest contracts have been negotiated in the eastern section of the United States for the over-road truckers, that the contracts that Mr. Hoffa has negotiated in the Central Conference of Teamsters are not as good contracts, that in addition to that, Mr. Hoffa has made collusive deals with employers, which, although the terms of the contract might read very well, that he has gone behind the terms of the contract and made secret deals with the employers. And I speak of particularly the Risk Company, where Mr. Hoffa made signed a contract with the Risk Company, a trucking company in the Midwest, that he then made a secret oral agreement with the Risk Company that the employees would be paid a cent and a half per mile instead of the fringe benefits, that this was never approved by the union membership, that subsequently that all of the employees of the Risk Company were told that they would have to purchase the trucks in order to keep their seniority as the employees, that they were forced to purchase the trucks at some $15,000, although the trucks were 4 years old and had been purchased some 4 years prior to that time for some $13,500, that when the membership started to object to these things, that Mr. Hoffa, who was a close friend of Mr. Riss, transferred all of the members of the union, which were all around the country, into his own local, so that if a member from Kansas City wanted to protest, he had to go all the way to Detroit and protest to Mr. Hoffa himself. And we found, of course, that none of those grievances were settled. So this is just one of a number of instances. And the Commercial Carriers Company, he moved in the Commercial Carriers Company and settled a strike against the union members. And then the Commercial Carriers Company set him up in a trucking company in Tennessee in his wife's maiden name, which has resulted in profits of some $200,000 for Mr. Hoffa and Mr. Owen Bert Brennan, his fellow Teamster official. Those are just two examples of very many examples.
Well, Mr. Kennedy, on the matter of payoff, in a report by Business Week magazine, which certainly is not very friendly to Mr. Huffa, this is what they said. Even employers who have testified to payoffs in Teamster strike situations have not directly accused Huffa of taking any payoff money. Whether any definite illegality on Huffa's part can be shown remains a question.
Well,
what's your answer
I'd
to that?
I'd say that to you, this to you, Mr. Spivak. Going back to the Commercial Carriers Company, they had a strike. Mr. Huffa came in and spoke against, took the side of the company against the union membership. Shortly afterwards, a trucking company was set up in Tennessee, first in the name of the lawyer for the Commercial Carriers Company, which is a major trucking company. And then some 3 weeks later, it was transferred to the names of Mr. Hoffa's, in his maiden wife's name, and to Mr. Owen Bert Brennan's wife in her maiden name. And it remained like that. It remained a secret deal until it was exposed by a congressional committee. And it has resulted in profits of some $250,000 for Mr. Huffa and Mr. Brennan.
Well, Mr. Kennedy, are these statements that you made with the immunity of your committee, or are these things that you could prove in a court of law? There's a vast difference, and I think you'll admit that.
No, I think that these are things that have been established as factual material before the committee. And these are the type of thing which I claim and feel, and the committee feels, has shown that Mr. Huffa has betrayed the union membership and has betrayed the union membership continuously. I say that Mr. Huffa and those around him are not interested in the union membership. They are only interested only in themselves, only in bettering their own lots, that they have not helped or benefited the union membership, that the best contracts are by honest union officials. Mr. Tom Hickey, up in New York of Local 807, the local in Pittsburgh, the locals in Ohio, which have been run by Mr. Jim Lukens, some of the locals out in the Western Conference of Teamsters. Those locals have the best contract. They have nothing to do with Mr. James Huffa.
Mr. Folliard.
Counselor, a little while ago you watched Mr. Huffa on the Face the Nation program. What did you think of his performance?
Well, I think that it was most unfortunate, Mr. Folliard, that questions were not asked regarding his own activities and the activities of his chief lieutenants. I understand there was some agreement that was made with Mr. Huffa that they would restrict the questioning to just legislation. I think this is most unfortunate. I don't think that you should, that the Attorney General, it would have been well for the Attorney General to debate the tax laws with Al Capone. And I don't think it's well for to discuss legislation with Mr. James Huffa. I think it's worthwhile if you have him on a program and ask him for explanations of the sellout of union members, for the misuse of union funds, or any of these other things. But I don't think it's very interesting to find out what Mr. Huffa thinks of legislation. He is the chief reason why legislation is being considered, he and his chief lieutenants.
Yeah, let me ask you something else. Suppose that the Teamsters had a national convention next week. Huffa would be elected president again, wouldn't he? Is there any doubt in your mind about that?
Yes, there is.
He would be elected.
Yes. No, I mean, there is a serious doubt in my mind.
Oh, is there?
I think that the Teamster members are like every other citizen.
Yeah.
And I think that they are disgusted with it. I don't think that there is a leader that has come along to oppose Mr. Huffa, so I think it makes it more difficult.
Yeah, well, let's suppose that he would be elected, just for the first of all. What, trying to think how he could be ousted as president. Would any of these bills now pending in Congress have any provision under which he could be ousted as president?
No, they
no.
would not.
Now, what about the Board of Monitors appointed by a federal judge here to oversee the affairs of the Teamsters Union? Would that Board of Monitors, say, by a vote of 2-1, have the power to bring about Huffa's ouster as president of the Teamsters Union?
They would have the power to take the first major step in that direction, to call for his ouster, and then there would have to be a trial, which I think would have to be supervised by either the court or by somebody appointed by the court. But they definitely have that power to move against Mr. Huffa personally, and I would think that it's a very good chance that they will do so.
I'm trying to see how you would bring about a trial.
There are charges against Mr. Huffa already by some rank and file members. They have been submitted to the monitors. The monitors, in turn, would have to take it up with the court to decide how the international president could be tried. There is nothing in the Teamster Constitution that provides for that, so that would have to be decided by the monitors.
Mrs. Craig.
Mr. Kennedy, Mr. Hoffa just said that labor unions are the free, voluntary association of workers. Does the record before your committee show that that was true of the Teamsters under Beck Hoffa and their friends?
No, in many cases it shows to the contrary.
Yes. Did he also deny extortion or any some of the other charges made against him? Did my ears deceive me at your hearing when I heard of murders, beatings, dynamitings, and other threats?
Well, you have union officials who hold their union positions at the present time who have been convicted of murder, who have been convicted of extortion, who have been convicted of narcotics peddling, who have been convicted of armed robbery. You have a union official in New York City who is receiving $375 a week salary and $25 a week expenses, and he's in jail for extortion. He's head of Mr. Sam Goldstein, who's head of Local 239 in New York City.
Has the libel suit been filed against you yet? Do you know what he's suing you for?
I do not.
What do you think he's suing you for?
Don't
you know?
I don't know.
There was one thing he said he'd sue you for, but you didn't mention that on the air, did you, the other night?
I believe not. I do not know what he's suing me for. I haven't heard from him personally or from his attorney.
You said you'd welcome the suit. Why do you welcome the suit?
I'd welcome it because I think that it would be, well, Mr. Hoffa complains that they have no right of cross-examination, that the that these hearings are not fair. I think that I made these charges about him. I feel them very strongly, and I think the record supports them. And I think that it would be well to submit that to a jury and make its decision. But I think it should be understood that Mr. Hoffa, if he is not sustained in his charge that I have committed libel against him, should resign as international president.
Well, your committee did not get much out of Mr. Hoffa. Could the court get more?
Mr. Hoffa would have to answer all the questions, certainly, before
in the court. You mean in a libel suit, you mean he would have to testify in
That's
the libel
correct.
Suit? Under oath and would be compelled to answer?
That's correct.
Mr. Mollenhoff.
Mr. Kennedy, Mr. Hoffa mentioned a few moments ago that Glenn Smith, one of the people that you had been criticizing, had been recently cleared by the courts, and that apparently Mr. Smith is now a free man and that you shouldn't be criticizing him anymore. What's your position on that?
In my estimation, that is typical of the problem that we have, and that's why it's so absolutely necessary that we get some new laws in the book. Here is Mr. Glenn Smith, who's been convicted of robbery and convicted of burglary before he became a Teamster Union official. He became a Teamster Union official, and in 1952, he took $20,000. He was indicted on 10 counts. He took $20,000 of union funds to fix a judge. The judge was fixed. Mr. Glenn Smith then testified before our committee, and we developed the fact that he had taken the $20,000 for that purpose. Ultimately, he admitted taking the union funds for that purpose. He testified in a trial down in Tennessee that he didn't feel that the union should take disciplinary action against him because it did not violate the Teamster Constitution to corrupt a public official. The attorneys that Mr. Glenn Smith used in his income tax case, because then he was charged with income tax evasion because he hadn't declared this money, they were paid out of union funds, and they argued two things. Number one, that he had passed the money on to the judge and therefore he shouldn't have to pay it. Shouldn't have to pay taxes on it, or he had embezzled the funds. These are the arguments that they made on his behalf, that he had corrupted a public official. He was cleared on the income tax evasion because the judge felt that he had, in fact, passed it on to the judge.
Mr. Kennedy, your position on Glenn Smith would be no different today than it was two or three weeks ago when you had Mr. Hoffa before
you. I think it's just outrageous that a man like that would be supported, that union funds would be used in his defense, and that he should receive his salary 6 months in advance like he did, Glenn Smith. I don't think the fact that he's guilty of tax evasion has anything to do with it.
Mr. Kennedy, you have come in for a little criticism in the last week or two. You had a witness named Bartley Crum who gave some testimony that Mr. Hoffa was one of several individuals who engaged in a, quote, bribe of one of the monitors, Mr. Godfrey Smith. Now, in the last week, Mr. Crum has made a statement in which he has changed his position somewhat. Mr. Hoffa makes a point that you should never have used Mr. Crum in the first place and that the committee was unfair in this whole business.
Well, now, we interviewed Mr. Crum about 5 or 6 weeks ago. He had considerable documentation for the statements that he made. We interviewed a number of witnesses. I feel very strongly of the responsibility of the Congressional Committee that we should not just put a witness on who will testify to anything, that we should try to corroborate what he's going to say. This we did in this case. And Mr. Crum's testimony before the committee has not been contested, either by Mr. Hoffa or by Mr. Edward Bennett Williams, except on one point, and that was in connection with a luncheon. And Mr. Crum's affidavit that he submitted this week did not alter that. He felt that the implications that arose from his testimony should be different. But he has not altered his testimony, as I understand it.
You would call Mr. Crum again if you had
to. I certainly would call, and I think it is a very critical situation because, as it was developed before the committee, what they were doing, the Teamsters, were offering that they would pay Mr. Godfrey Schmidt's attorney's fees as a monitor if he would resign as a monitor. The quid pro quo was his resignation. And I think that that is something that should be looked into by the Department of Justice, and I still feel it.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Kennedy, at one time or another in your investigations, you've charged Mr. Huffa with almost everything in the book. And he's countered with this question: if I or my associates have done something wrong, why aren't we arrested or convicted? What's your answer to that?
Well,
why aren't they if they've done all these wrongs?
Well, a number of them, of course, have been arrested and convicted, but a number of the offenses of Mr. Huffa are not punishable, at least at the present time, by law. Things that are wrong, are morally wrong, agreements that he's made, the sellout of the union members. For instance, Mr. Spivak, let me just give you one example. And the insurance for the Central Conference of Teamsters. Mr. Huffa awarded that insurance back in 1949 to a young man by the name of Alan Dorfman, who at the time the negotiations began did not even have a license. We found that it was not awarded to the low bidder. Since 1950 through 1958, from expert testimony, this man was a friend of Mr. Huffa, we have found that he was paid $1,600,000 in excess of commissions, over and above the regular commission. During 1952 and 1954, the commissions were raised for Mr. Alan Dorfman, while the benefits for the union members were decreased. At the same time they were decreasing the benefits for the members, they were increasing the commissions for Mr. Alan Dorfman. That was a complete betrayal of the union membership. But there's nothing that in the law that will cover it. But I think based on that alone, Mr. Huffa does not belong as international president.
Well, Mr. Kennedy, you questioned Mr. Huffa, as I remember it, about 13 or 14 times, and you indicated on many occasions that you thought he wasn't telling the truth. Wasn't he under oath? And if he wasn't telling the truth, isn't he liable to a charge of perjury and investigation for that? Why haven't you done something about that?
In many cases, of course, when I stated that, he was evading the question or saying, I don't recall, or to the best of my recollection, I don't remember. Second point where he did give unequivocal answers, of course, we do not have the power, Mr. Spivak, to send anybody to jail or to indict anybody. That is entirely up to the Department of Justice. It's up to them to take the action with a grand jury. So it's beyond us pointing out the fact that there is a clear conflict in the testimony. It is then up to the Department of Justice to take action.
Well, do you believe that he has committed perjury and that the department has been negligent in its attack on the situation?
Mr. Spivak, I will say that the committee has sent testimony to the Department of Justice and requested action in particular cases.
Mr. Folliard.
How do you account for this long parade of Teamster officials who have taken the Fifth Amendment, who have said that if they answered questions, it would incriminate them? What is the explanation for this? What are they afraid of?
Well, I'd like to say first, and Mr. Huffa made a statement that an individual comes in there and doesn't know what the questions are going to be, doesn't know what he's going to be asked, takes the Fifth Amendment, that we have made it a rule that any time a witness wishes to be interviewed or will be interviewed, we will interview him and tell him the subjects that we are going to go into. That is a procedure that we have followed since this committee originated. As far as these people coming in and taking the Fifth Amendment, I think in many cases they're taking the Fifth Amendment honestly, that they give a truthful answer and it might tend to incriminate them. I think on other cases they have been told by individuals in the hierarchy of the Teamsters Union or because of fright that they must take the Fifth Amendment. And, of course, many of them are involved in financial deals with Mr. Huffa, where he deals only in cash and only these individuals might have the explanation. And he it tells them, as he did before our committee, he said, now only so-and-so, Roland McMasters, has the answer, or only Owen Burt Brennan has the answer. And then as he left the witness stand, as we were calling these people for the answer, he indicated to them, he said, take the Fifth, and pointed with his hand. So then you don't get any explanation. Then you ask Mr. Huffa, well, you ask them what the explanation and give the explanation to the committee. And he refuses to do that.
What is he hiding? Why are they afraid to answer questions with respect to Mr. Hoffa's affairs?
Well, Mr. Hoffa holds their life and death as far as their jobs are concerned. Many of them making thousands and thousands of dollars. For instance, his friend out in Chicago is receiving a salary equivalent to $90,000 a year, and he doesn't want to give that up. And if he has some explanation for Mr. Hoffa, Mr. Hoffa assures him that he comes in and takes the Fifth Amendment, he'll maintain his position.
Mrs. Craig.
Mr. Kennedy, the Teamsters are said to be the largest single union in the world. And then planning to expand to take in other forms of transportation. Even if you cleaned up the Teamsters, would that not still leave them with what you call a frightening power?
I think that it does, but I think that it would make a major difference to rid it of its present leadership. I think that there are very many honest Teamster officials throughout the United States who have served their members very, very well, and by the vast majority. And I think that any one or a number of those who gain control of the Teamsters, that the whole operation of the Teamsters would be changed, that it would be a union for its membership and not just for a group of Mr. Hoffa and his cronies.
Did you not say that Hoffa and his associates held themselves above the law?
Yes, I feel very strongly about that.
How can they be brought under effective law?
Well, I think that the law that is being considered now, dealing with the control over union funds, democratic procedures within unions, trusteeship, felons holding union positions, the so-called middleman between employer and a labor union official, I think legislation in those fields would be very strong. And I think the fact that Mr. Hoffa is opposing the law so stringently and so actively shows that he is very scared about the law and that it is a very good law.
Why did the McClellan Committee not recommend bringing such vast power and union under the anti-monopoly laws as business and industry now is?
Well, I think that it is felt that we should take the first step, and that this is a very major step, the control over corruption. And I think that there is some feeling that any other step should be considered. We should see how this works, that the anti-monopoly is a very drastic step. And I think that it's felt by the members of the committee that we should take this first...
Did they contemplate anti-monopoly later?
I think there has been some consideration about that.
Mr. Mullenhoff.
Mr. Kennedy, Mr. Hoffa has acknowledged that he has rather big political plans for 1960, including a fund which might run as much as $7 or $9 million. Do you think that Hoffa's entering into politics in that way could influence congressional and senatorial elections?
I think that that's what he intends, and I think the fact that he has announced it this week shows that he intends to intimidate the members of Congress. And I'd like to say here, if I may, that I think that Mr. Hoffa or Mr. Beck or any of these other individuals are not important, nor is my relationship with them. That they just represent something that is very bad and evil. And that I think that that the important thing is that we get some laws to deal with this. I feel that if the work of this committee is pretty much wasted, and the headlines are going to be forgotten, and rightfully so, unless we get some legislation to deal with the problems. As I say, the Dave Beck of last year or the Jimmy Hoffas of today will be forgotten. However, the defects in law that permitted their operations will return us and plague us with new Becks and Hoffas. Well, Can I just finish this? We haven't got now any strong lobbying group that's trying to get some legislation through. We haven't got any strong group that's here trying to pass a law. And I hope that the only people that want legislation and want it very strongly are the people themselves. And I hope that people, if they feel this way and feel strongly, will contact their congressman and tell them that they want legislation passed. And if they don't know the name of their congressman, of course, they can get it from the post office. And if they can't get it there, of course, they can write to their stations and the letters and telegrams would be forwarded on.
Some of Mr. Hoffa's people have been meeting with congressional groups over on the House side recently. Do you feel that Hoffa, despite the revelations of the McClellan Committee, still has some substantial influence in the Democratic and in some segments of the Republican Party?
In some areas, I think he does.
Well, do you think it's a strong enough factor that this could have an influence relative to Senator Kennedy's chances for a Democratic nomination?
I'm afraid we're not going to be able to get into the election. I'm sorry, but I must interrupt. Thank you very much, Mr. Kennedy, for being with us.
Our thanks to Mr. Robert F. Kennedy, counsel of the so-called Senate Rackets Committee, and to members of the Meet the Press panel for an interesting half hour.